You are listening to KTCU 88.7 FM, Fort Worth.
Welcome to Riff Ram Review, your TCU sports talk home right here on 88.7 The Choice. Here are your hosts, Seth Dowdle, Luke Anderson, Jackson James, and Ian Napetian. Welcome back to Riff Ram Review right here on 88.7 The Choice, your choice for college radio. Ian Napetian here alongside Seth Dowdle, Jackson James, and Luke Anderson as we're back for the last episode of the semester. Boys, how are we doing tonight? We had a week off for Thanksgiving break, but now we're kind of back into the school grind with finals coming up. How are you guys doing?
I mean, it is intense here in Fort Worth. I can feel the emotion of finals rising around the students. Everyone's kind of nail-biting, they're stressed, and they're pulling their hair out. But we have some great sports to talk about. So for the next 2 hours, we got to sit back and talk sports and kind of go into a chill zone. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, sports season is heating up a little bit as it gets a little bit chillier around here weather-wise. But no, we got some exciting stuff to talk about, obviously, with TCU notching that eighth and final victory of the season, and then women's basketball doing pretty well over there. So I'm excited to talk about each of those today.
Yeah, it's been good. It's been a good break, and now finals, which, you know, kind of surreal that we're already at this point for finals. Yeah,
seriously. And for those tuning in, this is Seth Dowdle's last episode as a member here on Riff Ram Review. He's graduating here in December. So, Mr. Seth, congratulations. Thank you so much for everything you've done. You've been the best producer we ever could have asked for.
Stop it.
43 episodes strong.
Stop it.
But no, man. How does it feel?
honestly, it feels pretty surreal. I'm very thankful for this time. And it's been a great outlet for sports talk. 43 episodes is kind of wild. This time, you know, kind of, I mean, like just over a year and a half ago, we were infants, Ian, you know, yep. Me, you, and then Zion, and then obviously been blessed to be with you guys, Jackson and Luke, coming on this semester. But yeah, it's really surreal, but very blessed to be able to do this.
Yeah, no, it's been awesome having you on, and then I mean, obviously going to miss you, and if you ever want to come back, we'd be happy to have producer Seth back on for very special, you know, episodes. We can do interviews with the married man himself now.
Y'all can have a married segment.
Yeah, exactly. We can bring you and Callie on, you know, that would be fun, special guest. But no, and then also, giving the flowers to Luke too, you're graduating as well. We know that you're still going to be involved a little bit next semester, so obviously we'll try to have you back as much as possible, if not full time. But you're graduating too. How does it kind of feel right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Just definitely surreal. Kind of like Seth said, kind of hard to wrap your mind around the fact that this is the last week we'll ever go to a real class. The last week we'll really be grinding and you know, studying and preparing for some tests that, you know, could make or break our grades. You know, so it's just a little bittersweet, but excited for what the future holds, and excited to continue being a part of Riff Ram Review.
Yo, we love it. That's what we love to hear. That's what we love to hear.
I think, should we make the announcement real quick about the future of this show? So obviously Ian and I, we still got one more semester here being a Horned Frog, but we're like, let's continue Riff Ram Review. And so we're excited to announce that we will be returning for another semester on Monday nights. We're on a new night from 6 to 8 p.m. I'm very excited for that time slot.
I love that time slot. It's my favorite. That's what we were last spring, and it just worked out well with baseball season. Got, you know, fresh off of a series, got to talk about it. It was just nice for us because everything was fresh in our minds. But we're happy to be back. It'll be the fourth semester in a row, and looking to rack up the episodes, trying to get as many as we can. It'll be a fun semester, super fun, looking towards Big 12 conference play for men's and women's basketball, then obviously baseball and everything else that comes with it. So it should be fun. This has been an awesome semester, really enjoying it, but time to get into the real business and the nitty-gritty of everything. We're going to start off with men's and women's basketball, but particularly women's basketball first. TC women's basketball now 8-0 for the second consecutive season. They won the Cayman Islands Classic this last week over Thanksgiving break. They beat number 3 Notre Dame 76-68, and then beating South Florida 87-46. Guys, that win over Notre Dame, was amazing. Just the fact that TCU now has two ranked wins on the season, one against NC State, now one against Notre Dame. I mean, what are the general thoughts and feelings and vibes around this team right now? Because it feels like they're pretty unstoppable heading into this week against FAU, and then obviously the big game on Sunday against number three South Carolina.
I mean, this team just keeps proving that they're for real. I love their early season schedule. They've had multiple tests at this point, NC State and Notre Dame. And this one was going to be a very interesting matchup for the Horned Frogs. Notre Dame, they have really a great front or a backcourt. And I thought, okay, that's a way to beat TCU. Be faster than them. But no, they were not able to really, or it was actually really clutch on how they performed in that fourth quarter. That's when you really see how resilient a team is. I think it was 14 points that they were down by entering that final quarter, and then they outscored the Fighting Irish 31-12. So they not only got stops, but then they started hitting their shots. And so for the Horned Frogs to get a win like this, unfortunate that it was in such a, you know, small gym.
Very off-site win.
It was in my elementary school cafeteria, actually, was where they played this game.
And on whatever broadcasting site it was
Flow on. Flow Sports, baby.
Flow Sports. And they got rewarded by now being number 9, which is huge. I think this is their first top 10 or ranked win as being a ranked team since 2003, dang, which is absolutely insane. We could go into Sedona Prince's stats. She dropped 20 and 20. That's just insane. And could go along, we haven't talked about, or I feel like the media hasn't talked about this enough, 8 blocks.
Yeah,
she was a monster to begin the season with the first couple of games, leading the college basketball in blocks per game. And we didn't see too much against that against NC State. I think she only had 1 or 2 blocks in that one, and then she comes back with a master class like this. And then Van Lith, you know, another great showing. How many points did he have?
19 second 21. Half points for Van Lith, which is huge.
That's
right.
Huge.
So to see her only have 2 in that first half, bounce back with 19 in the second half. TCU at one point was down by at least 10 points to Notre Dame, so the fact that they were able to kind of stay close enough and, you know, kind of like bend but not break was huge. I mean, I just think it's a shame that not enough people could watch. I mean, I couldn't watch it, I didn't decide to pay to watch it through Flow Sports, but I mean, hell of a win though.
Yeah, yeah. And I will say this before I hand it off. Van Lith and Prince both received the Ann Myers Drysdale National Player of the Week honors, and then they were voted as like the best duo of the week in college basketball. And I think that's going to be a real storyline as they get into, obviously, the game on Sunday against South Carolina, but also in Big 12 play, as they are now the last undefeated team in the Big 12, which is an interesting stat.
Yes, and also the highest ranked Big 12 team, which, again, it's early, but significant. This is kind of a place where TCU women's basketball has never been before. We're starting the show off with it. I think that kind of, you know, speaks for itself about what this team is and what they've proven to all of us. I think the biggest thing that stands out to me again about, you know, TCU's week, one, the resiliency. 31-12 is what the fourth quarter was for TCU Notre Dame. Obviously, TCU was down, and then they outscore them by almost 20 points, which is crazy just to have that kind of run there. But I honestly think the biggest thing for me, and this is maybe not the biggest, but something that's really important to me, is they played the next day against USF, and they very easily could have played super, you know, hungover from success. But no, they went out there and beat them by 40. And I think that kind of shows the mentality of this team, that they know that what is ahead of them is more important than what has happened behind them.
Yeah.
They very easily could have gone out there and just been, you know, high on themselves, but they didn't, and they went out there and took care of business. And I think that's very important, because you see a lot of teams that are unfamiliar to success might have gone out there and laid a stinker, but they didn't. And they go out there and they sweep the weekend and win the Cayman Islands Classic. So, yeah. Notre Dame win, impressive. USF win, impressive. We don't have to talk about that one because, you know, I mean, they killed them. But it's just a ton of fun to see this team gelled together this easily. It's like they've played together for years, but this is a team full of transfers. It's really cool and really unique.
Yeah, and I love that you guys mentioned just their emphasis on scheduling these tough challenges and these non-conference opponents that will really test them and show this coaching staff what they need to work on and where some of these strengths and weaknesses lie as they get into conference play. But one thing I did want to note, because Jackson brought it up, obviously, you know, we had to address the elephant in the room with Sedona Prince. You can't, you know, talk about this this stint in the Cayman Islands without mentioning just how dominant she's been. But I think that that's really what separates this TCU team from some of these other teams throughout the country, some of those other top teams in women's college basketball. Because you look at college basketball as a whole, on the men's or women's side, it's so incredibly important to have a dominant big. And I think it's even more so the case in women's college basketball, because when you have a big that can do that can show the versatility that Prince shows, she's shown the ability to stretch the floor, shoot 35% from three this year. She's shown the ability to protect the rim. She's averaging 4.3 blocks this season, which is just an insane stat, and just not many big men in women's college basketball are doing that quite at the same level that she is. And so it's what kind of elevates this TCU team from being, hey, they're a nice fun story that could knock off some top teams, to, hey, they're legit. They've got an anchor down low, and then they've got a guard that's really blossoming, and Haley Van Lith that's showing her ability to play the true point guard role and focus on her playmaking and her assist totals and creating for this this talented TCU team that has a lot of shooters and a lot of scorers around her. So there's just a couple notes that I wanted to bring up, because I thought that this was the perfect invitational for them to just kind of showcase their newfound attributes.
Yeah, and I mean, if we can just take a step back, right? I mean, a couple weeks ago, maybe 2-3 weeks ago, we were looking ahead at the schedule saying, okay, you've got Notre Dame, then you've got South Carolina, all within about, you know, not within the same week, but within about 11-12 days. And we're all sitting here saying, oh man, if we can maybe split those, if we could get one of those wins, what says that TCU can't go and beat South Carolina at this point? It's going to be a hard game. It's going to be tough. That's without question. But, right, I mean, this team's got so much confidence. They've got a sense of swagger to them. They've got, they've got the momentum with them, right? To your point, Luke, right? Last year was kind of like, all right, this is a cool story. Really cool what Mark Campbell's done in his first year. Is it sustainable? It wasn't sustainable due to injury. But then you come back this year and you're like, all right, kind of the same thing. Is it going to be sustainable? And now it's like, all right, it's a fun story, but they're really doing it. I mean, this team, as much of a cool story this is for everybody else, TCU women's basketball expected this from themselves this year. They went into the portal. They worked it incredibly well, brought in such good talent, and now who knows what their limit is. I mean, the way that they've gotten off to this start here this season's been insane. I mean, just a couple stats for you guys or the listeners, you know, tuning in, and I mean, just take it for what you will, but this win over Notre Dame, it's TCU's fifth all-time win over an AP top five team. It's their first top 10 win since January of 2018 when they beat number 7 Texas. It's their second straight ranked win. It's not a second straight ranked win, but it's two ranked wins in the same season for the first time since the 1920 season. And now it's tied for the highest ranked win in program history.
Did you say 1920 season?
The 1920 season.
That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. Pre-COVID, which is crazy. And then
pre-COVID.
Wait, no, you mean 2019.
2019. Yeah.
You're saying 1920.
What?
Yeah, I was going to say 1920.
You're saying almost
pre-COVID.
A century ago.
Oh, my bad. I meant 2019-2020 season. Sorry. That's what I meant.
1920 is definitely pre-COVID.
Just sorry. A little bit. I meant during the 19... Sorry. No. Goodness, no. My
you
bad.
You like backed it up, too. I was like, wait, what?
Sorry. Yeah. For the first time since 2019-2020 season, TCU has two ranked wins in the same season. Yeah, I mean, this team is just so fun to watch. Every game that they go out, they continue to impress. So, I mean, I feel like we're beating a dead horse here, but they're just so fun to talk about and to watch. So
yeah, and I think, you know, I don't know if the game on Sunday against South Carolina is going to be on ESPN. I would assume it is. I mean, it's going to be a top 10 matchup in women's basketball. Obviously, they have to take care of business against Florida Atlantic tomorrow night. But speaking of the Gamecocks from South Carolina, they actually lost this season. So they're not, you know, this impenetrable fearsome team that, you know, they've been of years past. It was UCLA, the number five team in the country at the moment, when they snapped South Carolina's 43-game winning streak.
That's crazy.
They hadn't lost a game since Caitlin Clark beat them in the semifinals 2 years ago, which is just absolutely insane. And so I think TCU's got to look at this one for some, you know, a recipe to how do you defeat this team? Well, they got out, or South Carolina got out-rebounded by UCLA. They weren't, you know, able to score around 80 points, which has been their season average. And I think if obviously if they were to score 80 points, that's going to be huge. That's a tough thing for TCU to overcome. But I think if they can one, if Sedona's got to have another, I think, 20-20 game in this one. She's got to rack up the boards, especially. And it's got to be a team effort, really getting the ball, because that was a huge factor. They got to get it. They have to get off to a fast start. The Gamecocks were outscored, I think it was like 41 to 20 something. Yeah, 43 to 22 at halftime of the game. So they were winning by 21 points. And I think if TCU can get out to a hot start, there was an 11-0 run in this one, a 7-0 run by the Bruins, especially in that first and second quarter where they shot 52% from the field. So they were able to really have a great game offensively. And so I think we're going to have to see another recipe for the Frogs. To note, South Carolina does play the number 8 Duke Devils tomorrow, on Thursday this week at 8 p.m. on ESPN. So if you want a little bit preview of the Gamecocks, why don't you tune in? But that's also something they can't necessarily have their eyes on the prize for TCU at this point. Now, that could be something for a trap tomorrow against Florida Atlantic for TCU. I think that, like Seth, you mentioned how they were able to rebound and beat South Florida in the Cayman Islands. And so, obviously, the women's team will be watching the Gamecock game on Thursday to prepare for that stellar of a Sunday night matchup.
Yeah, women's basketball is just on fire. It's been a great start to the season. And again, just like you mentioned, it'll be a real, real good test once again against South Carolina. But Gamecocks have to face Duke first. They got to take it one game at a time. It's the same exact way TCU does, too. Now switching gears real quick, we want to squeeze in men's basketball. We haven't talked about them a ton this season. Men's basketball, with a record of 4-3 now this season, they're coming off of back-to-back losses at the Akrisure Invitational. They lost to Santa Clara 69-52 and then Colorado State the next day for the third place consolation 76-72 in overtime. Luke, you were there for that. I don't know how much you want to talk about it because you do work for the team, so we want to be careful about that. But, I mean, I'll open it up to everybody here. But men's basketball has definitely hit a rough patch. And I mean, I don't know exactly where this stands with people's expectations at the start of the season. I know at least for me, seeing how many new players there were, I felt like it was going to take a lot of time for these guys to be able to gel well together. But, you know, it's not really playing out, I think, the way obviously Jamie Dixon wants, the way that the program wants. What are your guys' kind of thoughts when we're kind of sitting here 7 games into this, you know, still very young season?
Luke, how was the golf course?
The resort was phenomenal. Beautiful weather every day. Honestly, Palm Springs was a joy outside of the basketball played there.
That's crazy.
Sorry, I thought that was a more pressing question.
No,
yeah, certainly more more enjoyable to talk about than what actually happened on the court. I think what it boils down to right now, and Ian alluded to it perfectly in the intro there, but it's just with this many new faces on a roster, it's going to take some time. And obviously in Coach Jamie Dixon's system with a no middle defense that enforces loading up on one side and you know, just really communicating and being connected with your teammates defensively, and then a pretty rigorous half court offense with a lot of different actions for each set, and it's a lot for new guys to learn. And when you have as many new guys trying to learn that in one off season, both on the defensive and the offensive side, we knew there were going to be some hiccups. But so far, I think the main problem with this team is just the lack of rebounding and the lack of size that they have in comparison to what they've had in previous years. Now, with Coach Dixon's philosophy, a lot of a lot of his offense and a lot of his ability to generate points comes from winning the rebounding battle and from getting out in transition, grabbing the rebound, finding an outlet man, and getting out in transition and scoring as quickly as possible. With only one center on the roster that's played minutes in college basketball, and that being Ernest Udeh, with only one center that's played minutes in college basketball, it's gonna be difficult for you to not only grab rebounds but also just to execute that offense every single time down the floor. So with a 6'7" freshman in David Punch, just really trying to learn that center role and to be that backup center that's so necessary in a team that predicates rebounding, it's really difficult to pick up really quickly in your first season as a freshman.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess with that in mind, right? It's a very young team, also a very new team, right? Do you think this will help the program come, you know, next season and the season after that, if these young guys can get that experience on the floor early on, even if this season doesn't go any which way that they would hope? I mean, do you think that'll help?
Absolutely. And I as much as I know that it's very easy to say the sky is falling and, you know, doom and gloom, and, you know, they've lost some games to teams that they're better than and teams that they should have beat, and teams, quite frankly, that played poorly, but TCU happened to play even more poorly with some more talented players. So they know that, and the coaching staff knows that, and that's, there's been, you know, some clear strengths and weaknesses that have been picked up on, and some clear areas of improvement that have been highlighted, but like I said, just that rebounding differential is just so crucial going forward. You just look at that Santa Clara game. That's a Santa Clara team that is not a good basketball team. They are around 110 in rebounding. So they're right around, you know, a third of the way down Division I teams in rebounding. And TCU got out rebounded by 11 to them. Got out rebounded by 11. They shot 1-for-17 from three. This is a TCU 6%. Team. This is a TCU team that is continuing to shoot the ball poorly. 235th in the country in 3-point percentage. So some clear areas of improvement: shooting the ball better and rebounding. And we'll look to see that improve, because there are possibly some lineup changes in the works. Maybe trying some David Punch at the four. Maybe trying some bigger lineups just to try and get some more rebounds and try and give this offense some second chances.
Sweet. Love it. Yeah. I mean, hopefully, obviously, for men's basketball, they can try to find a way to turn it around. They've lost three of their last four since starting the season 3-0. They lost to Michigan, beat Alcorn State, lost to Santa Clara, then Colorado State. The men play next on Thursday at 7 p.m. here at the Schollmeyer against Xavier. That game will be on ESPN+. And yeah, that'll be on Thursday. And then for the women's team, they play tomorrow against Florida Atlantic. What time is that game at? Is that that's an evening game at 7 p.m.? Is that a 7 p.m. start? I know Jackson's doing the pregame show, so.
6:30 start.
All right.
We go live at 6 o'clock for the pregame show.
There you go.
And postgame show after here on KTCU.
Yeah.
So make sure you tune in tomorrow for some women's basketball.
Yeah, that'll be good against FAU. And then again, this Sunday, TCU up against number 3 South Carolina on Sunday, December 8th at Dickey's. That'll be a fun one as well. Be sure to tune into that. But that will do it for our men's and women's basketball segment. Really enjoyed talking about both of these programs. Up next, we've got to talk about TCU football after finishing the regular season 8-4, a big win over Cincinnati. We'll kind of talk about the season as a whole, but also kind of looking ahead to possible bowl games. So stick right here. You're listening to Rare Frame Review on 88.7 The Choice.
Chris, you're not acting like a grown-up in our relationship.
M2.
There's your comic book collection, the race car bed.
I'm young at heart, but I put money into my 401k every paycheck. I'm taking control over my financial life, and that feels pretty grown up to me.
Put away a few bucks, feel like a million bucks. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
Are those footy pajamas?
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Riff Ram Review right here on 88.7 The Choice. your choice for college radio. Ian Napishan here alongside Seth Dowdle, Jackson James, and Luke Anderson. We just finished talking about TCU men's and women's basketball. Now it is on to TCU football. The Frogs just wrapped up their regular season, got a big win 20-13 over Cincinnati in Cincinnati. That game started off with some mild weather, then it became a little snowstorm a little bit, but TCU with a really good win. Not exactly what we were expecting in terms of the score, but TCU otherwise still going ahead 8-4 now this year. Very strange to say that TCU is 8-4. It just doesn't feel like an 8-4 type of season. But the Frogs, they found a way to get their bowl game. They finished the season strong, we'll look ahead to that too. But did you guys watch the game? I didn't watch the game because I was on a flight. So
I caught a lot of it.
Okay,
I watched half of it.
Yeah, I was also on a flight, so I had to rewatch it.
I watched my Frogs. I was confident in my Frogs, though. They looked good when I watched, especially in Cincinnati's attempt to go and tie the game. Well, I did see them score that touchdown to make it 13-20, and then they missed the extra point twice in a row. after TCU penalty, I was like, oh, dang, now it's going to be 20-14, which would have been huge because, obviously, a touchdown and the extra point puts you up by one, and you potentially win the game. But nope, then they missed it again. So at that point, I kind of knew that this one was in for the Frogs.
This might be the most forgettable TCU game I've ever experienced, other than like what happened in the final like half of the fourth quarter. So TCU goes up, they're up 20-7 or whatever, and they don't score another point again, and usually that's a recipe for disaster for this TCU season. We saw that in the UCF game, and then I feel like it's happened a couple of times where they're just like holding on for dear life to a lead. They don't score again, but it doesn't matter because Cincinnati is inept apparently, and also was not prepared to play in the snow. They apparently did not tell their place kicker that he was going to need a kick in the snow because, of, as you mentioned, Jackson, two missed extra points, and one of them was closer than the one previous. And then their quarterback, Brendan Sorsby, threw maybe the worst Hail Mary I've ever seen in my entire life. It like went into the stands.
Yeah, went out of the end zone.
Really?
Haven't seen one of those.
Oh, I will say that was bad, but that the attempted touchdown pass he had on the drive prior.
Oh, with a pick?
With the pick. He threw that thing into triple coverage in the corner of the end zone. It was bad. Yeah, a rough game. A rough game for Cincinnati's offense.
Yeah, but TCU, hey, I mean, 8-4 in the year hot. Cincinnati was, I think Cincinnati was 5-4 and they lost four straight.
They were 5-2 and they.
Oh my god!
Yeah, so they blew their season really.
Dang, 5-2.
Yep. Oh, there was a point in time where I said to myself, "Hey, Cincinnati is actually pretty okay this year. Like they're pretty good."
And they don't make a bowl game.
I check back and they're 5-6.
Yeah, that's kind of nuts.
But they didn't even get smoked in these games. Colorado, they lost by 9 or 11. West Virginia, they lost by 7. Iowa State, they lost by 14. Kansas State, they got smoked, and then to lose TCU. So, dang, that's depressing.
Welcome to the Big 12, man. It's just coin flips all over.
And they lost like 5 of them in a row.
If you look at their beginning of their season, though, they lost to Pitt by 1 point, and then they lost to Texas Tech by 3. So they're 4 points away from making a bowl game.
They sound just like us.
Yeah.
Except we're in a bowl.
A bunch of what ifs.
Yeah.
We were
4 points
season.
Away from the college football playoff.
Seriously. I was going to bring that up briefly, but TCU ended the season hot, winning 5 of their last 6 games dating back to October 19th. But again, right, you look at this face value, like TCU 8-4. If somebody told me TCU was going to go 8-4, I'd be like, great. The manner in which we went 8-4 was probably the worst manner I've ever seen going 8-4 in terms of the fact that we should be 10-2 after that UCF game and that Houston game, because goodness gracious, what the hell was that? right? But I mean, either way, happy that we have a bowl game. I'm curious to hear what you guys have to say, and then obviously we'll talk about possible bowls for TCU. But
yeah, I just think a lot of that sentiment kind of stems from the fact that these games, like the Houston game and the UCF game, it seemed like there were these, like, the reason that kept TCU from being a 10-2 team versus an 8-4 team was completely TCU's fault. And each of these games, I mean, you look at the, you're up 17 points against UCF and you blow it, and then you don't come ready to play at all on a Friday at home against the worst team in the conference.
No, that is Oklahoma State.
Sorry.
Do not disrespect Houston.
They actually did put up a fight against some good teams toward the end of the season. So that loss.
They're not even in the bottom three of the conference.
Yeah. So there we go. You know what? Quality. That's the elusive quality loss.
The elusive quality loss.
TCU has three quality losses.
Very true. But if you look at it as a whole, like Ian said, if you take out the 2022 season where TCU went to the national championship, 8-4 is the program's best record in the past 7 seasons.
That's crazy.
So that's crazy. A little crazy, but then when you start going through the years, you're like, you know what? Yeah, that's the best season that they've had by far. And to your point, Ian, I think a lot of that is because TCU had the second easiest schedule in the Big 12. If you look at strength of record, strength of schedule, pretty much any of those markers, they're going to finish in the bottom three of all those in the Big 12 in terms of schedule. So there's just a lot more that could have been accomplished. But considering where we were after that Houston loss, I would say it's kind of reinvigorated a lot of hope in the fan base, but also kind of in the coaching staff and hopefully in a lot of these players as they look to either enter the portal or remain faithful to Funky Town.
Yes. A couple notes about this season. Sorry, Jackson.
I just wanted to say that our backup long snapper hit the portal.
Yeah, 5-star.
So we're losing
You're
him.
Kidding.
He's a 5-star.
He can't long snap it to a kicker that's going to miss now?
Dang. All right. A couple notes about this season. If TCU just beat the teams on its schedule that did not make a bowl game, they would be 9-3. So that's one thing. That's very sad. That makes me very sad. But what makes me happier is what you said, Luke, about, you know, it's encouraging when 5 of the last 6 games. Also, TCU has the highest ranked recruiting class coming in for 25 in the Big 12, 22nd in the country right now. Signing day is tomorrow, so that could change in a couple of different ways, hopefully for the better. But and that means nothing if you don't develop those players and those players don't come in and stay and buy into the program. But on face value, on paper, TCU's getting in a good freshman class next year to add on to what was a pretty good one this season as well, as long as they, you know, retain some of those key contributors like Jeremy Payne and stuff like that. So there is, you know, a bright future, I'd say, that they were able to pull themselves up and to make this season, you know, worth something. It very well could have been worth nothing. I mean, we were talking after that Houston loss about, you know, sending this coaching staff into the gutter. But now I think we're going into next year and we feel pretty good about giving everyone a little extra room for error and a little bit of extra, you know, leeway because we've seen that they can be successful.
Yeah, and just one more point. I think kind of that key cog in that turnaround for this TCU team kind of came from that defense. And, you know, for we're looking at the Cincinnati game in particular. This was the second time in 3 games that the Frogs have held their opponent under 14 points, and that's the third time in the last 6 games. So over this second half of the season, they really locked in, and Andy Avalos and his guys really were able to kind of diagnose what this team excelled at on the defensive end. Now, they did allow 214 rushing yards, so of course that's still going to be a pretty big weakness and something that we're going to look for the coaching staff to shore up in terms of getting a defensive lineman and some good run stoppers in the portal. But they did force 2 turnovers in critical spots, too. I mean, you see guys like Johnny Hodges had 9 tackles, Bud Clark had 8 tackles, Obi Azor had 7 tackles. And then you see the defensive line, guys like Marcus Deal, he had 3 tackles for loss. So I think that's a good sign for next year. You see some of these younger defensive linemen, some of these younger run stoppers kind of starting to show some promise and hopefully, you know, getting ready to break out for next year. But I am really interested to see first full offseason of Andy Avalos going out and getting the guys that he wants to fit his defense. And hopefully the Horned Frogs can kind of build on this success from their defense and have more of a consistent defense going into next year's campaign.
I will say this. I was looking at their 2023 season, how they ended. They lost 4 out of 5. And so this end to the season, winning 5 out of 6, is monumentally better. But one thing I do want to mention is there's still a bowl game to play. Right, so we're talking about it right now, and there's things that obviously could go wrong. Like, we could just get blown out, obviously, right, in the defense, then you start feeling a little bit worse. But I think the way TCU has been playing, like Luke, like you said, defense is playing pretty well. You got to watch out for that run game. But I think one thing that we're also glossing over is the performance of Josh Hoover. I don't have his stats in front of me, but he's done a much better job of protecting the ball. And especially when your defense is lackluster. We see this in the NFL with Joe Burrow. If he turnovers the ball, his defense can't help him at all. And we kind of saw that early on in the season. If Josh Hoover were to put his defense into a pickle, there was really no chance that they were going to be able to get out of it without giving up some points. And so for him to really clean up his play, I think that was huge, especially as the season, or as the rest of the season, got fairly easy in opponents. It really helped them to get out to these wide margins, especially against Oklahoma State, Arizona, and kept, you know, their lead in that Cincinnati game. So you got to give your, you got to tip your cap to Josh Hoover on protecting the ball. And he's going to come in next season, I think, with a lot of momentum, especially if he plays well in this bowl game.
Yeah. Kind of talking about bowl games now. I mean, TCU, there's a couple that we've seen, right, Seth? But I think the biggest one that could happen appears to be the Liberty Bowl.
It seems to be the large, you know, before we go into what TCU will have, we have to discuss the sadness about what they will not have.
Yep.
TCU will not be going to the Pop-Tarts Bowl this year.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about Jack Besh.
Both.
Oops.
I have the Jack Besh injury report pulled up here. I thought you were going to talk.
No. I'm sorry. I was talking about the Pop-Tarts Bowl.
We got better priorities, I guess.
Screw the Pop-Tarts, man.
Yes, Jack Besh is out for the bowl game. He probably wasn't going to play in it anyway. And I'm glad that his injury is not bad, because he can now probably play in the Senior Bowl still.
I hope so.
Which is on February 1st.
Fingers crossed, yeah.
Okay, for me, as I didn't catch it early in the game, what happened? I know it was like an knee injury and people were really nervous about it.
Yeah.
Obviously, we got some good news back that it wasn't anything crazy.
Yeah, he was tackled from the side and his knee kind of just
twisted.
Yeah, but no, it came back. It's an MCL injury, but there's no ligament damage, so it says about 4 to 6 weeks. So, but yeah, I mean, that sucks, but you're right, Seth. He probably wasn't going to play, I guess.
No. He might have, but if he put on a helmet, I would have taken it from him and said, stop that. Don't do that. Don't play in the Liberty Bowl. Obviously, I would have liked him to, but you know, I obviously would have got it. Same with Savion. Actually, I will be mad if Savion Williams plays in the bowl game. That's my opinion.
I would say there goes our red zone offense.
I know.
Yeah,
but it's probably the best thing for him not to play. And I think that's the thing we get into a little bit of a pickle, Seth, is you want to see these guys play in the best, you know, in the prize of the season, because you want to go away being, oh, we won the Liberty Bowl. Like, you want to take that away, but then you also want these guys to represent TCU in the league and be healthy doing that. So it is tough, but I think that's also something that Kendall Briles will have to cook up a little bit. We might have to see him get in the kitchen a little bit and rediscover this TCU red zone offense, but also just this offense as whole, because Savion Williams was really another cog, if we're talking about how they were able to rally 5 out of 6.
Yeah.
He was huge, not only in the pass game, but especially in that run game. So,
and you know, this bowl game, you know, see guys like Savion Williams, Jack Besh being out, even if, you know, the biggest names aren't necessarily playing, that may open up some looks for guys that we've been kind of, you know, wanting to know a little bit more about, some of these younger guys that maybe are trying to preserve red shirts or just didn't get a run for whatever reason throughout the season. I mean, you look at a guy like Hoss Haney, he had 48 rushing yards on 8 carries in this last game. Bowl games don't count to your eligibility, so he still preserves his red shirt.
Awesome.
You know, you'll get some looks at Hoss Haney for sure. We'll obviously get some run packages with him, but then you also look at a guy like Jeremy Payne, you know, some of these younger guys that you might try and just get some looks at in the office. So I think that's another fun thing that Frog fans can look forward to if our best offensive performers aren't necessarily out there.
Yeah, and that's kind of where it makes it hard to judge the game based on who's playing. If like everyone is playing, then we can judge like that as a continuation of the 2024 season. But if not, then it's kind of more like 2025 preseason light.
Right.
So obviously we're all rooting for TCU to win, but if they don't, then it's not the end of the world. But the other bowl games, like you said, Ian, Liberty Bowl, I've seen LSU and Oklahoma tabbed for potential opponents.
I would love an SEC matchup.
Also, the Texas Bowl, that would also be an SEC matchup. That'd be down in Houston. And then there's one where I've seen for the Rate Bowl. Not the Guaranteed Rate Bowl, just the Rate Bowl.
I noticed that.
In Phoenix.
Rate Bowl. It's interesting.
Wait, they took away the
guaranteed rate?
So it's not guaranteed?
It is literally just the Rate Bowl.
Man.
Okay. And that's in Phoenix. That's at Chase Field, the baseball stadium. And then there has been one projection for TCU just to play at Amon G. Carter in the Armed Forces Bowl, which would be particularly lame.
Boo.
That would suck, but that would also be really funny.
It'd be convenient.
Well, obviously, every time that game plays, it's always freezing in Fort Worth. So it's like, I wouldn't expect too many fans to come out to that one. But I think it would just be really funny to have a bowl game in your own home stadium, regardless of the fact that it would be lackluster. I think it would just be really fun.
The Armed Forces Bowl peaked when Air Force came into this building and beat Baylor in like negative 1700 degree weather.
When TCU was
in the College Football Playoff.
So, no, that was pretty sweet.
That's a lose-lose situation. Well, it's kind of like a win-lose, I guess. But like, if you lose in your own home stadium for the bowl game, yikes.
It's a bad look,
that's
for sure.
A bad look.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, imagine being in the visitor's locker room.
Yeah, it would. It would. So TCU, to have it be neutral, they would go move everything into the visitor's locker room. Very neutral.
I hope that they get a good opponent and, you know, play a good game, and hopefully are able to shine on a bigger stage than where they were for the last couple weeks of the season, playing in a couple of ESPN Plus games against Oklahoma State and Cincinnati. Overall grade, I think we'll end our TCU talk for the entirety of the season. I think we should give it a grade. I'm gonna go B minus.
B minus. That's exactly.
Yeah,
what
stole
I was
my grade.
I was gonna go. I was thinking B minus. But I'll think a little bit on the optimistic side. I'll go with a B plus. Now you're like, oh, that's a little crazy.
No.
We're talking plus and minuses here, all right? But I would say the way they ended their season is why they get the plus. I think if, especially what they were able to do to overcome kind of their struggles, it gives me faith in this coaching staff to be able to overcome challenges that we'll see in this bowl game or next season. And so I think this is a really good ending to a really lackluster season that we all kind of agreed upon. And I think that's one of the best things to come out of the season, right? Is, yeah, it was lackluster, but we ended on a high note. And so going on to next season, you kind of want to carry this momentum into hopefully a successful campaign, especially that week one game against North Carolina, in which they just fired, I think, Mac Brown's his name, who was like the longest tenured college football coach. So that'll be a very interesting matchup for the Frogs. But here's to the bowl game in 2025. I'm super excited for this team. And I think it's going to be a very exciting one, to say the least.
Yeah, no, it'll be good. I mean, this has just been one of the strangest seasons, I think, for TCU college football, in the sense of just trying to, you know, wrestle with yourself about what this team can bring, what this team has, you know, what the ability of this team is, and then seeing if they can actually do it and execute on the field. But nonetheless, 8-4 this season, heading to a bowl game. We've known that for a couple weeks now, but pretty soon we'll get to learn exactly what bowl game that is. It should be coming out on that Sunday right after this coming weekend with all the conference championships. We'll get to that, but before, we've got CFP rankings coming up next right here on Riff Ram Review.
So when you get to the corner of Smith and Orchard, you're going to want to take a
you
left.
You are not going to
then what
this.
You're
going to
do is turn onto Marcy
and
Brett Avenue.
Just broke up.
And go past
and
the first three lights
happy
and then take
it.
The next left.
I don't really
then
think
five
she's
more
happy,
blocks,
but
and you should be
who
there.
Who am I to judge, right?
Park
anyway,
on the right.
That's
I'll
what
see
I heard
you later
last
tonight.
Night.
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text. Stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone, to Riff Ram Review. It's the final one of the semester. Boo. But you know what it's not the final one of? The college football playoff rankings. We get one more of these. I'm so upset about that. I hate these so much. Guys, we've learned that the committee is dumb. The committee is stupid and dumb. Would y'all agree?
Yes.
Okay.
Two thumbs up.
Two thumbs up.
Three.
Three, yeah. Stupid and dumb. But we have the rankings for this week in front of us. It kind of feels like we have all the information we need before the conference championship games. Should we just get into it? Should we just jump in? Dive right in, guys?
Dive right in.
Thoughts? Where do we want to start? We start at the bottom or we start at the top? In the middle?
You start at the bottom.
In the middle.
In the middle.
We'll start at 13.
Luke, Memphis is 25.
Wow.
Who? Who, Memphis?
Yes. Memphis is 10-2. They beat Tulane on Thanksgiving, the game that everyone was watching on Thanksgiving night. Army, the troops are 24. Salute the troops. They deserve all of our attention. Colorado, fall from grace, man. They had destiny in the palm of their hands, guys. They had it. And they let it go. All to just, what, lose to Kansas? Goodness.
Kansas just decided to mess up everything in the Big 12 and then just leave.
And then lose their last game so they couldn't make a bowl.
Yeah,
they
were like, all right, we're going to ruin the party, but we're not going to show up for the last one.
That's like going to your neighbor's house, dropping a deuce, and then just leaving.
And you barely know your neighbor.
That's crazy.
Syracuse beats Miami and jumps up 22. Hey, heck of a Syracuse, a very quiet 9-3 this year.
I did not expect Kyle McCord to do as well as he did.
Had a better weekend than Kyle McCord? Ohio State loses to Michigan.
Josh Allen.
That's a good point.
Josh Allen had a pretty good weekend.
I think Kyle McCord had a pretty good weekend, though.
He did.
Who in Western New York had a better weekend, Kyle McCord or Josh Allen?
Josh Allen. <Yeah.
laughs> Run KMC, baby.
Yeah. I mean, Kyle McCord watches Michigan beat Ohio State. You know, after last year where Michigan beats Ohio State, everyone's blaming him, so he leaves, and then it still happens anyway. I think it's quite funny. Illinois, 21, another quiet 9-3, but, you know, they're right there. UNLV at 20, at 10-2, but would you believe it? If they win on Friday night against Boise State, they are in the college football playoff. UNLV.
I think everyone would kind of be disappointed with that, though. I mean, we're going to get into the championship games next, but they've been in one of those sneaky teams. I forgot who brought it up. One of the college football or one of the ESPN guys brought it up during game day. He was like, watch out for this UNLV. I think it was Herb Street because of their
opportunity.
He's
the only one who knows ball, so yeah, yeah. It makes sense.
So for them to be 20 entering championship week is very surprising. And maybe there'll be the, you know, new Indiana in terms of this underdog story. So
maybe. Missouri is at 19 and I'm angry about it.
Why are they still right?
I don't get it. Do y'all remember when they played A&M and Bama and they lost by like 80 combined?
Where's the quality wins?
Aren't those still the only two ranked teams they've played?
Who, Bama?
Missouri.
Oh, Missouri. They lost to South Carolina too.
There you go. Yeah. They lose to the only ranked teams they play.
Yeah. I don't know.
Quality wins. Where are they at?
Auburn.
Empty your pockets.
They don't got anything. BYU, the disrespect for Brigham Young at 18. They're 10-2. They have a win against number 8 SMU. And they're disrespected, in my opinion.
Okay, but where would you have them ranked higher? I know we're like a spoiler alert, but
I would have them ranked higher than Iowa State.
Who's currently 16.
Yes.
What about Clemson?
My God, we're skipping teams, guys.
What are you to do?
I would definitely have them ranked higher than Clemson. Yeah, what right? Clemson, what has Clemson shown me this year?
Right. They got hot for a little bit against bad opponents, and then they kind of went away.
Yeah. But Clemson is at 17. Clemson wins against SMU on Saturday. They're in the playoff. Kind of undeserved, but it's whatever. Iowa State and Arizona State are 16-15. They play each other in the Big 12 title game. They're both 10-2. South Carolina, 14. Ole Miss, 13. Miami, 12. That was my biggest question, is how far does Miami fall, and where are they placed in the midst of that Bama, Ole Miss, South Carolina grouping? But Alabama's at 11, and guys, losses to 6-6 Oklahoma don't hit as hard as they used to. And those things kind of used to just propel you out of here.
21-point losses at that.
Yes. But now those are quality losses on the road. Quality losses to Vandy on the road as well. Everyone loves those.
Where'd Vandy go? That was a flash in the pan.
Quality losses to Vandy on the road. It's crazy.
Yeah, but Alabama, if SMU beats Clemson, Alabama is in the college football playoff with 3 losses.
Okay, well, I want to talk about that then. Because you think SMU with the loss is gone, is out of there.
Maybe.
In terms of the top 12.
I would say that is unjust because Alabama is not playing an extra game to get an extra loss. And even if SMU loses, they will have one fewer loss.
Yeah, I would say this. I think for SMU to make it, they just got to have a close game. I think they will reward them for the success they've had this season. And especially they'll look at that Oklahoma loss for Bama and just how bad they looked. They handled their business against Auburn, which if that was close, I think that would, even if they won, I think that would have hurt Bama in retrospect as they really nitpick these. You know, it's going to be tough to get those like top 10 through 12 in those final rankings. But I think that Alabama-SMU is going to be a little dicey once we get to it.
We'll see. I mean, I don't know. You could put the 2024 Chicago White Sox in Alabama uniforms, and I think the College Football Committee would rank them pretty high.
That just went over y'all's heads.
Y'all get it?
That's funny. I like
it. Yeah.
No, because they stink.
Yeah. They were terrible.
They haven't been washed.
Yeah,
get it? Because they're socks?
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
That's...
I think the biggest thing that Alabama has going for it is their logo, personally. That's my opinion, but it's whatever. Boise State's at 10. It's winning, they're in. Losing, they're out. That's how it's going to go. Indiana, they are in. They're locked into this at 11-1. They're at 9. SMU, as we talked about, is at 8. And then we'll rapid fire through the top 7. Tennessee, Ohio State. Ohio State only dropped 4 spots. Losses to 7-5 Michigan on the road. At home. Don't hit as hard as they used to. Goodness. Georgia, Notre Dame, Penn State, Texas, and Oregon. Overall thoughts about the picture, guys, about where we're sitting at? I mean, we kind of just talked about it with you know, SMU and Bama, but any other, you know, overarching thoughts?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, if you kind of look at how the playoff bracket is set up with each of the matchups, like the 12 versus 5 being Arizona State, Penn State, and then, you know, like 9-8 Tennessee versus Ohio State, who do you feel, just from the current bracket as it is right now, who do you feel kind of is set up to make a run? You like their matchup, just how it stands right now?
Well, this is the debate, right? How do you value the bye more, or like two, you know, on paper
easier
games?
Yeah, we're gonna have a whole thing like the MLB playoffs. Yeah. With, you know, do you want the bye or do you not?
I mean, Penn State on paper, if Penn State is slotted where they are right now when the bracket comes out, that's a pretty good draw.
I think so too.
But I still think that I would like the bye, because one thing that I heard that I think is very profound but is also very obvious: injuries happen against bad teams too. And I think just having an extra week of rest is valuable no matter what, no matter if your second-round opponent is Boise State or if it's Georgia. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think one place where I have a little bit of intrigue is that 9-8 matchup. That's currently Ohio State at 8 and Tennessee at 9. And then the winner of that would go on to face number 1, Oregon. I think if you're Tennessee or Ohio State, you're looking at that just praying that anything other than that happens so that you can kind of move up spots. Because I really do think Tennessee or Ohio State has the goods to, if they can get a good matchup, pretty much anyone other than Oregon, I think they can run the table and win this thing. But I also don't hate Alabama sitting there, sneaky 11-6 matchup with Notre Dame, and then the winner takes on SMU.
I want to ask this question then. Which team do you think got screwed? Or will get like a, not screwed, but like have the toughest first round matchup, or even in the quarterfinals?
The toughest?
Yeah,
slates right now.
I think Tennessee got screwed as it stands right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really needed Ohio State to beat Michigan.
Right.
And now they might. Now here's the thing though. That, you know, it's kind of like, you know, a two-edged sword. Ohio State could either be like super motivated to prove themselves, or they could just be like the season is over and they don't, like, it just is a total mail-in effort. I don't think that's what will happen. I mean, I think they're competitors, but it would definitely be which version of them are we going to get? Are we going to get the version that, you know, is pouty and just lost to Michigan, or are we going to get the version that goes out there and tries to compete? It's definitely a question for sure, but I know that the seeding is really going to matter for the first round games, because who's hosting? That's the big question. Is Tennessee going to Columbus, or is Ohio State going to Knoxville? Those are two vastly different places this time of year. I mean, they're both going to be cold, but one of them, it might be very, very cold.
Yeah, and you got to think about it. That's like 3 or 4 points there to the spread. Those are genuine top 5 atmospheres in college football, where that crowd really does kind of work as a 12th man, and it could be crucial in this kind of first ever home playoff atmosphere.
I think that's the thing I'm most excited about this format. I think it's very, I think it's a broken format in a lot of ways. I don't like, I'm fine with auto bids for conference champs, but I'm not a fan of reseeding them to the top like that. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Agreed.
I'm a big fan of home playoff games, and I wish that that was happening all the way up to the semis. I wish that the teams that got the byes got home playoff games. I think that would be make this format 10 times better.
Are the quarterfinals bowl games?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you get a bye, then you don't get a home playoff game, which I think is kind of screw job.
So you could potentially be like a Cotton Bowl, Rose Bowl, and national champion all in the same season?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Dang. Oh, yeah, I didn't realize that.
Just put it like put it on the banner, man. Yeah.
That's kind of crazy. You have to win a playoff game to win a, like have a chance to win a bowl game.
Have they announced which bowl games the semifinals would be? I'm guessing it would be Rose Bowl and something else.
Usually Rose Bowl and Sugar Bowl are tied together.
I wonder if they'll rotate it.
Like they've done in years past. They will rotate it.
That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Okay, here we go. The quarterfinals are the Fiesta Bowl, Peach Bowl, Rose Bowl, and Sugar Bowl.
Ooh.
The semis are the Orange and the Cotton Bowl.
It might be Orange Bowl and Cotton Bowl's
turn. Yeah, so they will rotate it. Okay.
Arlington on January 10th going to get a semifinal. So that's exciting.
Imagine playing in the Rose Bowl, and then you're like, okay, now you got the Orange Bowl, or now you got the Cotton Bowl. You're like, that's kind of a little lackluster.
Yeah.
And then you're like sandwiched in between a national championship.
And the national championship is in Atlanta, for what it's worth. Mercedes-Benz
Stadium.
Yes. So yeah, I think my biggest takeaway from this is... SMU is this. If there's going to be a team that gets a screw job, quote unquote, it would be SMU if they lost and then are left out in favor of a three-loss Alabama team. Now, obviously, it depends on how the game goes against Clemson. If they get beaten by 70, then sure, get them out of there. But if you know it's like a 10-point game, then I don't know.
You know what team I would really love to see would be South Carolina. They've been one of those sneaky teams this season. They've ended the season maybe the hottest team in college football. And then, obviously, if you look earlier in the season, they had some questionable calls. I think it was against LSU that really screwed them in that game. That's a loss. Now that they're at 9-3, they don't have a chance in the SEC championship. So that's just unfortunate. But I would really like to see that team. There's some other teams that, you know, maybe have a shot. I would love to see Miami. And I'm forgetting the quarterback's name. How do I forget? He's a Heisman candidate.
Cam Ward.
Cam Ward.
Future Raider.
Future Raider Cam Ward.
Not Shadur?
No. No.
They're currently 12 as of these rankings, but they'll probably drop potentially.
I mean, they can't help their own cause.
Yeah, they can't help.
Same with South Carolina, I think, is too far down to even, like, they're not going to jump Ole Miss, Miami, and Alabama when they didn't play a game.
Yeah, so it's just unfortunate for them. Ole Miss is one of these teams. I would say they're a little lackluster this season. They had a lot of hype going in this year, and then they just dropped some games that they could not drop. Like the Kentucky game was just absolutely a knucklehead game. That's kind of our UCF in a little bit of a way, or even the Houston game where it's just like, how did we lose that one? And then I'm glad to see Clemson out. I think we're all kind of done over with them after that Georgia game. So,
but man, if they beat SMU, they're in.
I know, and this might be the first time I'm ever rooting for SMU because I think they're a fun story. And then they can lose in the first round, if they have to play in the first round.
I think I've just like become indifferent about SMU this year. If they, it's whatever happens, it's fine. I don't care.
A CFP game at SMU would be crazy.
Which will
they might finally pack their stadium.
I don't think that's even possible.
Is it not possible? Okay.
No, because if they win, they get the bye, and if they lose, they'll drop, and will be an away team.
That's right. Okay.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because they're at eight right now.
Yeah, that's right.
Unless they say, hey, we're not going to drop you because you lost, but. I mean, come on.
We're talking about the committee here.
If Florida State won all of their games, who was an ACC team, was left out for a one-loss Alabama team, it can certainly happen to Southern Methodist University. If it can happen to Florida State, it can happen to SMU. That is true. That is the end-all be-all there. Well, those are the rankings. We've set the stage for this weekend. On the other side of this break, we're going to go inside, and we're going to predict every single conference championship game this weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun, so stay tuned for that. It's coming up on the other side of the quick break right here on 88.7 KTCU, the choice, your choice for college radio.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In biology, in English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today...
The only thing I didn't learn today...
The only thing I didn't learn...
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
What is that?
Oh, that? It's my time machine.
Does it work?
Sure. Just hit this button.
Whoa, dinosaurs. Cool.
Or we can go here.
Hey, that's Napoleon.
Oui.
Or we can go to the future.
Wow, hey, you have this nice house. Do I have a nice house?
No, you didn't save any money. Always spent it on vacations and stuff.
If only there was a way I could go back in time and correct that bad habit.
Yep.
Okay, the time machine is not real, but the saving thing is. Get in the habit of putting some of your money in savings each week through a 401k, savings account, or financial investments. Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. For free ideas and easy tips on saving, go to feedthepig.org. That's feedthepig.org.
What does this crazy little button do?
Wait, no!
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
This is TCU women's basketball player Sedona Prince, and you're listening to KTCU 88.7 FM Fort Worth. Go Frogs!
Welcome in, everyone. It's the second hour of the final Riff-Ram Review. What about that? Ever, right?
No, of the semester, man.
Oh, okay, my bad.
It's the last Riff-Ram Review for you, at least.
That's a good point. Come on. Apparently things continue beyond me. That's crazy. We just talked about the college football playoff rankings, and now we will be discussing the conference championship games. We set the table. Now let's eat. How about that? Guys.
Thanksgiving is over.
Oh, my bad.
Food was so good.
It really was. It really, really was. So... you know what else is going to be good? All of these conference championship games, hopefully. I don't think there's a single one that has a spread higher than 5. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
That is pretty crazy.
That is pretty crazy.
You're wrong.
That's something.
5.5, I know.
Five and a half, Sunbelt, Marshall, Louisiana.
I just saw it. My bad.
There's no conference championship game with a spread bigger than 6.
You just got fact-checked.
How crazy is that?
Thank you, Ian.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it. All right. We're going to talk about every single one of these because it is so much fun. Now, we are the first to admit, I have not watched more than 10 minutes of Jacksonville State or Western Kentucky this season. But we're going to pick it anyway, and we want that opinion of what we pick to be just, you know, ironclad. That's what it's going to be. Here we go. 6 p.m. Central Time, CBS Sports Network, Western Kentucky, 8-4, Jacksonville State, 8-4. Jacksonville State is a 3.5-point favorite in the Conference USA Championship game in Jacksonville, Alabama. Roundtable, Luke, we'll start with you first. Who are you picking?
I'm going to go with Western Kentucky. Give me the Hilltoppers in an upset pick. I like their quarterback. He's thrown for 22 touchdowns this year, Caden Veldkamp. And that's really all I got for that one. But no, I'm kidding. I mean, Jacksonville State has a good running back. His name is Trey Stewart. He's got 1,400 rushing yards and 20 touchdowns. He leads Conference USA in both of those. So that'll be something to keep an eye out for, a little bit of contrast of styles with a Western Kentucky team that kind of likes to air out the ball. But I'll go Hilltoppers.
I'm going to go Hilltoppers as well. You know what? For some of these ones, I'm going to look at their logos and I'm going to judge it based off of that. I think that's a pretty cool logo. It's a hand waving a towel.
And I love their mascot, right? Yeah. The big red?
Love it. Is that what it is?
Yeah, have you seen
it? Yeah,
really?
It's like a big blob of red guy.
Is it really?
They had these sick helmets this year, too, where they just put the two eyes on it.
Oh, yes, yes.
Hey, Western Kentucky has some of the best helmets.
Oh, wow.
Western Kentucky, for what it's worth... I'm looking at the wrong schedule. My bad. I was looking at Jacksonville State. Yeah, Western Kentucky's got some nice uni swag. for sure.
Yeah, they are participators in the Chrome Dome as well.
Yes,
sometimes,
they are alongside TCU in the Chrome Dome. Jackson, what do you got in this one?
Now, look, if we're looking at how they ended their season, Western Kentucky, a little bit stumbling. They lost the 2 out of 3 to end their year, but you know who that win came against? This Jacksonville State. They won 19-17. Now, it is a little bit of a red flag. Western Kentucky did lose a game 12-7, and I kind of hate when a team does that. So, but I will hop on this train. I will go Western Kentucky in this one, as history will repeat itself. That's my prediction.
All right, I'm gonna go against the grain, and I'm gonna pick Jacksonville State. You mentioned, Jackson, that Western Kentucky beat Jacksonville State last week, 19-17. It's so hard to beat a team twice, especially 2 weeks in a row. So I'm going with Jacksonville State in the other Gamecocks. So, also Jacksonville State beat Florida State in Tallahassee like a couple years ago in Mike Norvell's first year there, I think, first or second year, and it was kind of crazy and nuts. So just want to point that out. All right, the next one we're going to predict. This one actually has real stakes and consequences. The Mountain West Championship game, number 20 UNLV against number 10 Boise State. Winner goes to the conference, goes to the College Football Playoff. This game is being played on the blue turf in Boise, Idaho. Luke, who do you got in a rematch of what was a really good game earlier in the year?
Yeah, I'll kind of harken back to that game a little bit here in my analysis of that, because the Boise State Broncos did beat UNLV 29-24 on October 29th. Ashton Ginty had 128 yards and a touchdown, 33 carries, but for the most part, it seemed like UNLV was kind of able to keep everything in front of them, and just kind of that was the first game, or I believe it was the first or second game with their new quarterback, Haj Malik Williams. And he had 105 rushing yards in that first game, but he wasn't really able to complete all of his passes at the efficiency you'd like to. So I think that Boise State's going to, you know, mix up the looks, and it's going to be an Ashton Ginty show again. I'm going to go Boise State.
Same here, man. Boise State all the way. They're 13-8 in bowl game history, and going to do it again.
I saw a very interesting graphic during the Boise State game this past week, in which Madsen's father named all of his children after famous baseball players. And for that reason, I'm taking Boise State
that was
to
fire.
Win this game.
That's such a dude.
That's such a guy thing to do.
What are his kids' names?
I'm trying to find it.
That's funny.
So Maddox, and then...
I think his daughter was named after Joe DiMaggio. It was like Macy Joe or something like that.
Interesting.
Names of family members. Come on. Here we go.
Okay.
Nope, this guy's face is in front of it, of the graphic. What is this guy doing? Do you have it, Seth?
I don't.
Oh, come on.
He's going to say his pick, yeah.
I'm picking Boise State for what it's worth. The Ashton Ginty train will continue to roll on. Luke, you mentioned that they were able to kind of contain him last time. I think he only averaged less than 4 yards per carry, which is maybe the only time that's happened this year. And if not, then it's a very rare occurrence for Ginty to be held in check. I don't know if they can do that again, especially at home in Boise. It's going to be cold. 38 degrees is the high. So, I'm going Boise State. So that's a sweep for the Broncos. All right.
Wait, I got the names. Okay. Shout out to this guy on FanDuel for blocking his face, or blocking the actual graphic. But he has a brother named Mick after Mickey Mantle. He has another brother named McGuire after Mark McGuire. He has a brother named Mays after Willie Mays. Let's see this Murphy. He has this brother named Murphy after...
Dale Murphy?
Yep. Yes, Dale Murphy.
No, Daniel Murphy. Goodness gracious.
And then is it Mackie Joe?
That's what I was saying. Macy Joe, I think.
Macy Joe. And I guess that's after Joe... DiMaggio. So
very cool.
Nice. I'm sure his wife was absolutely thrilled.
Yeah, I don't know how he pulled that one off.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
I think he pulled it off, and then he told her after. It was like a 10-year project.
There was like a joke like that once where it was the Arsenal or Larissa. They're like, I'll name my daughter Larissa.
That's right.
And then the husband eventually told the wife, "Oh, I just named her that because it's Arsenal backwards."
That's crazy. That guy sounds like a dope guy.
Yeah, that sounds like a really cool guy.
And his son can play football. Yeah, I know Ashton Ginty gets all the glory, but Madsen can play ball.
He can. He's a good QB. All right. real quick here on the American Championship game. I don't want to disrespect the troops, but we'll go real fast here. Tulane against number 24 Army in West Point. What do y'all got?
I'll go with the upset. I'll pick Tulane in this one. Actually, I guess they're favored. Never mind. It's not an upset, but I'll go with Tulane in this one.
Yeah, kind of for the same reason that we talked about, or that you mentioned, Seth, Jacksonville State and Western Kentucky, they played in their last matchup, and so it's hard to beat a team twice. I don't know where I'm going with that, but nonetheless,
yes, because Tulane and Army have not played this.
Tulane and Army have not played at all. That's why that was a terrible introduction. So forget that.
Use that for Georgia, Texas.
Yeah, use that for Georgia, Texas. Yeah. Tulane is coming off a loss to Memphis, and they're going to get right, and they're going to get right against the troops. I'm going to go Tulane.
Tulane, baby. Biggest party school. I'm going to be partying that night.
Wow. I'm going Army. It's going to be 26 degrees, and New Orleans babies ain't built for that.
New Orleans babies ain't built for that.
They ain't built for that. They ain't built for the triple option. They ain't built for the troops, and they ain't built for 26-degree weather. Give me the Black Knights in an upset, and they will be the American champions because that's how it should be because they are American troops. All right. Now we move on to the real goodies. The real goodie of them all, the Big 12 championship game. Iowa State, Arizona State. Winner to the playoff. Arizona State is a 2-point favorite.
I will go with Iowa State in this one. I think, you know, they have to conquer some demons. In the last time they were in the Big 12 championship game, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm guessing that was against Oklahoma.
It was.
In which they looked like they got stopped short on, I think, a fourth down or a third down that completely shifted the game. This is their opportunity to, you know, exercise those demons. And I think it would just be good for the Big 12, too, if they were the representative in the college football playoff.
Same here. Iowa State. That's it. I'm going quick, man. I don't really have much to say.
He's not long-winded like me. I'll keep my analysis brief here, though. Iowa State allows 174 rushing yards per game and 5 yards per carry. Cam Scataboo plays for the Arizona State Sun Devils, so I'm going to take Arizona State.
That is my analysis as well. Go Sun Devils. It's Arizona State because will Iowa State be able to stop them? I don't know. I don't think they can. So we're split on that one. Two Cyclones, two Arizona State. But that's my favorite game of this weekend, for sure. Not even because it's just a Big 12 game. Actually, you know what? It is because it's a Big 12 game, and Big 12 games are usually pretty insane. Real fast, the Battle of Ohio. Ohio versus Miami of Ohio. Just real rapid fire. Give me your pick in one word.
Give me the Ohio Bobcats.
That's more than one word. Miami.
Ohio.
Ohio. All right, here we go. Georgia, Texas. Can Georgia do it again, or does Texas have a rabbit that they can pull out of their hat and win the SEC championship in their first season in the league?
My analysis comes down to which quarterback can make, you know, less mistakes, and you know, I think there's going to be a lot of mistakes, so it's really going to be who can like limit themselves to like two or three. And you know, I think Georgia had their eyes last week on this game. They weren't necessarily paying too much attention to Georgia Tech, and for that reason, I'll go with the Georgia upsetting the Longhorns and proving what SEC ball is all about.
I can never pick Georgia, so Texas.
I'm going to say that this is quite a bit different game from last time because Texas only had 29 rushing yards the last time these two teams played. Quintrevion Weisner has averaged 170 yards rushing over the last two games for Texas, and Texas's defense has only allowed 9 points a game this month, or this last month in November. So I think things are trending toward the Longhorns. I'm going to go Texas.
Yeah, I can never on principle pick Georgia. I can never on principle root for them. So I'm picking Texas. I think this game goes a little bit differently. I don't know if Texas' offense can do a lot, but that defense is playing really well, and I don't really know if I can count on Georgia to give, you know, their best effort because I haven't really seen them give their best effort for a lot of this season, so give me the Longhorns.
I will say this. Where are y'all's principles at? How can you be picking Texas? That's all I got to say. I got a Georgia, but, like,
the other
Texas?
Team beat us by 58 in a national championship.
Oh, big whoop.
Now that Texas is out of the Big 12, I'm not against them doing Well,
all I'm going to say is if Texas wins this game, their likelihood of winning a game or winning a college football play, actually, I guess it probably gets higher if they lose because they'll have a home game.
Yep.
Huh.
You know what?
Nah, I'll stick with Georgia.
No take backs.
My thing is that record's going to go.
Gears returning.
Yeah. That record's going to go eventually because I know where you're going, that TCU is the only team in Texas to win a college football playoff game. But also, that's a very arbitrary record. What, were they the only team in Texas and New Mexico and Colorado and Oklahoma to win a college football playoff game? It's very arbitrary. But it's going to go eventually, and it's probably going to be the Longhorns that break it.
Just not this year.
It will probably. All right. Marshall in Louisiana. I'm going to be real quick here. I'm going Marshall because of the movie.
Oh, okay. You know, I almost watched that movie the other night, you know, because Matthew McConaughey's in that movie.
Mahogany.
You know what? Yeah, I'll pick Marshall just because of the movie.
Marshall.
Raging Cajuns, baby. Give me Louisiana.
All righty. It is in Louisiana, so... Maybe that plays a role. All right, here we go. Penn State did not think that they were going to be playing in the Big Ten title game, but then Ohio State pooped its pants in Columbus on Saturday afternoon, and now Penn State gets just a free invitation to go and win a Big Ten title, something that they have not done in the James Franklin era. Will they be able to do it against Oregon?
No. Oregon, by 50.
Oregon, not by 50, but Oregon.
Yeah, this is interesting because both of these teams are top 10 in scoring defenses. Penn State only allows 14 a game, and Oregon allows 16 a game. I think this is probably going to be the best pass rush that Dylan Gabriel has faced in quite a long time since that Ohio State game, though. So I'm very interested to see how that plays out. I think it's going to be closer than people will think. Maybe not quite covering, but I'm going to go Oregon.
Yeah, I'm going to go Oregon, too. The spread, I think, is closer than a lot of people thought. 3.5. But, yeah, I think Oregon is just that team. But hey, Penn State, you got a shot. Maybe go out there and try to prove all the haters wrong. And then finally, I don't know. This one's a tough one, I think, in my opinion. Clemson SMU in the ACC title game.
Give me the ponies. Well, I don't know.
Make that a soundbite. I'm going to go with SMU here. I think they have the momentum. They also have something to prove with this one. If I'm the coach and I'm in that locker room, I'm pressing like, we got to show people what we're about. You know, they had that game against BYU in which they dropped. And obviously, if you look at their schedule, they haven't had, you know, they had the Pitt game, which was the most recent. They had the big one against Louisville in which they won 34-27. But they should show all of these ESPN talking heads and being like, oh, SMU doesn't, I think they're fool's gold. They don't necessarily belong here. So I'm going to take SMU to come out with a really fiery start in that first quarter. And I think they carry that momentum all the way through the game.
Yeah, Jackson, I think you kind of laid it out all nicely there for my reasoning, too. I think that this is a chance for this SMU program to you know, really plant that flag and say, hey, we're here. Like, this is their first year in the ACC. They can win the ACC championship over probably the team that is the ACC's flagship team over the past few years in football. But I will say, with that being said, Clemson is 8-1 in ACC championship games under Dabo Swinney. And this is the only way that Clemson can make it to the college football playoff is with a win here in that championship game. So they're going to come out fighting, but I do think that this is a chance for SMU to establish itself on the national landscape. So I think SMU is going to show up to play. I'm going to give them the win.
Now, here's the deal. Y'all were saying, you know, we don't want TCU's, you know, record of being the only team in Texas to win a college football playoff game to be broken by Texas. That's the wrong team to be worried about here. You are worried about the team down the road because then they have some recruiting leverage over you. No. Clemson, get them out of here. Get the ponies out the paint. Golly. Alabama, you know, fine. Put the SEC team. I don't care. Get SMU out of here. Make them play in the, you know, Poinsettia Bowl. That's what they deserve. For beating Josh Hoover. He's a nice little young boy. He's nice. He beat him into the ground. They should be punished for that.
That was a hard day. That was a that was a hard one. That was long.
It was.
I'm just glad I didn't buy a ticket to that one. We were just walking around Dallas. We didn't go into the stadium. Yeah, no, especially because the start we got off to with the fumble. Don't even... the trauma.
I remember because I was picking up Jackson and some of our other friends in right by SMU, and we're going to go to a bar and watch, and we're listening on the radio, and then we just hear Brian Estridge say that, you know, TC fumbled, and we're sitting there waiting for the review, and it's like, oh my God, this is the worst start we ever could have had. And then 100-point game. I mean, like 100 points total. SMU just blows us out of the water. That was awful.
Especially with their special teams playing better than our special teams.
They won in all three phases.
Yep.
Gosh. But SMU, man.
For what it's worth, I know we didn't. We should probably talk about this in the college football playoff ranking segment. But they asked on the ESPN broadcast the committee chair Ward Manuel on whether SMU could drop below Alabama if they lost on Saturday. And I think he was a little bit too honest with this answer. He said, potentially, yes.
Well, at least they're admitting it now.
Yeah.
Because they used to say no and then just do it.
Yeah, I know. I thought we weren't supposed to, you know, think in hypotheticals. I thought that was taboo. Oh, wait, we always do that.
The what if has gone on a crazy run this year.
I know. Yes. What if is undefeated?
It is undefeated. What if lost? You know what I mean?
What if lost?
It really is like the defining characteristic of the college football playoff era is the hypothetical, you know, monster has really just risen above everything else, and it's kind of tainted the conversation around the sport, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's really like, you know, I don't know. I think it's an ugly discourse. I'm not a fan of it. Because what am I supposed to say about, like, oh, I think that Indiana would go 1-11 in an SEC schedule? It's like, what am I supposed to say to that?
That's what, you're telling me playoff rankings shouldn't be based off what record the SEC team would have in the Big 12? Because I think that that's number one criteria.
I think Ole Miss would go 9-3 in the Big 12 because there's a lot of Kentuckys in the Big 12.
Exactly.
There's a lot of them. A lot of Kentuckys and Floridas in the Big 12, let me tell you.
The whole conference, man. Whole conference is Florida and Kentuckys.
Yeah. It's a landmine full of Kentuckys. Slightly better Kentuckys, I might add. I think I'd pick TCU to beat Kentucky.
Yeah, I think so.
Give us
some
the
alternate banner. Universe, we'll see what happens. Yeah,
in some alternate universe. But nonetheless, conference championship game should be fun. We'll see what happens. With our pals down the street, our pals down in Austin, and, you know, every other game in the country. So that'll do it for our college football talk. A lot more is on the table here on the final episode of Riff Ram Review this semester. That's coming up next right here on 88.7 KTC, The Choice, your choice for college radio.
Chris, you're not acting like a grown-up in our relationship.
M2!
There's your comic book collection, the race car bed.
I'm young at heart, but I put money into my 401k every paycheck. I'm taking control over my financial life, and that feels pretty grown-up to me.
Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
Are those footy pajamas?
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Riff Ram Review here on KTCU 88.7, The Choice. I'm Jackson James, joined alongside Ian Apish and Luke Anderson and Seth Dowdle. We just got done talking college football and all those shenanigans. Now we're going to make it a little bit more professional as we move into the NFL. Thanksgiving week happened, and I would say two out of the three games were pretty entertaining. Obviously, the Bears debacle. Eberflus got kicked out of Chicago. I don't think he even landed in Chicago. I think they just booted him before he can even step foot, as he should, as they should, because that was an absolute dumb decision. Then you had the Cowboys continuing their make it a two-game winning streak, folks. The Cowboys have a two-game winning streak in the year 2024 as they beat the Giants 27-20. And then the Packers, you know, beat the brakes off the, you know, chilled Dolphins as the Dolphins can't play in the cold allegations. As the Dolphins now fall to 5-7 and their playoff hopes took a big hit because they came back, Tua came back, there was some new energy, and that kind of all went down the drain as the Packers are trying to climb up the NFC North ladder as they trail the Lions. But that's one thing I wanted to talk about real quick with you boys on the best teams in the NFL. Currently, I have the Eagles, Bills, and Lions. And so if the season were to end today, who do you think would have, you know, the best chance to win that Lombardi?
I think one team that you didn't mention that I think is probably one of the best all-around teams are the Steelers, at least this year. I don't know. But I guess outside of that, though, Bills are just on a heater. Lions are fantastic as well. I mean, there's so many likable teams, I think, that are doing well, at least for me. I love seeing the success story with the Lions. I love seeing the Bills do well because, I mean, gosh, they had such a depleted wide receiver room at the start that nobody, you know, including myself and several others, thought, you know, what is Josh Allen going to do? How is he going to deal with this? And somehow they've found a way. And, I mean, they clinched the AFC East last night. Or, sorry, on Sunday night. And now they're sitting 10-2. I mean, it's not a very competitive division. But, I mean, Bills are just on one right now. And I think depending on what matchups they get, they can have some really great success going into the playoffs. And because there is a weak team in the AFC and that I think are the Kansas City Chiefs. So.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of those Chiefs and the Bills have, I would say, a really good chance of getting that number one seed. And I think that would be huge for them. Looking at the Chiefs' schedule, I think they are as fraudulent gets. Now watch me eat my words, but they play a game versus at the Steelers and at Broncos. The Broncos are a little bit of a feisty team. They almost beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead earlier if their kick didn't get blocked. So the Chiefs will have a rougher end to their season. Let me see about the Bills, but I think the Bills right now are really the scariest team just because of their quarterback play. I think Josh Allen has playing the best at the quarterback position this year. He's having the most efficient year of his career, which last year he led the league in interceptions, and they didn't really help him out in the wide receiver room, like you mentioned, Ian. And then he gets off to a great start, winning the first three games. Then he drops a pair, and then since then has gone on a seven-game winning streak. And they play. They have a tough one against the Lions, but then after that, it's smooth sailing with two games against the Patriots and one versus the Jets. So I think it's going to be really tight for that AFC first seed. So I would have to say the Bills. Luke, who would you have as the best team in the NFL?
Yeah, right now, this might be just, you know, the layup, but I'm going to have to go with the Detroit Lions. I think they've just kind of been that steady presence all year. Of course, you look at the Chiefs in the AFC that have kind of rode that wave as well. But I think the Lions have just shown week in and week out that they're able to win in a variety of ways. They're a well-coached, disciplined football team that seems to show up every single week and have an agenda that they want to set and some doubters that they want to prove wrong. And it just seems like they're going to continue to be motivated by a head coach that's able to find motivation in spots where other guys might not. But another couple teams I just wanted to mention, we alluded to them, but I just wanted to bring this up because I think it's just so interesting, this note right here, that the NFC North is the first division in NFL history to have three teams with nine or more wins by the end of Thanksgiving Day.
That's insane.
So obviously you look at a team like the Detroit Lions that have just been pacing that division and that conference as a whole since the beginning of the season, but the Packers have slowly been right there with them, and they can notch that 10th win if they beat the Lions up on this Thursday night here this coming week. But another team that's quietly been right there as well is the Minnesota Vikings. So I guess that's kind of the take that I wanted to make there. It's not too big of a hot take, but I do think that the NFC representative in the Super Bowl is going to come from that division, the NFC North. You look at a Vikings team that's doing just enough on the defensive end to give Sam Darnold an opportunity to win them football games, and he's done it so far. And then you look at the Packers, who are, again, well-coached, and they have a quarterback who's blossoming, and he seems to be, you know, hitting his stride at the time, you know, when he was hitting it last year to around the end of November, you know, the start of December. It's kind of the right time when you want to be heating up. So I'd look for one of those three teams to kind of set the standard in the NFC going into the playoffs.
You know, I think a sneaky team that we keep forgetting is the Philadelphia Eagles. As a Cowboys guy, I don't really want to talk about them, but they have a really good shot at that one seed as they are 10-2 on the season. Their toughest game will be a home one against the Steelers. Obviously, they're they're very frisky this year, and I think they do earn some respect, especially Russell Wilson, the way he's playing. But they play Carolina, then they're at Washington, then they're playing the Cowboys, and they're playing the Giants. So that's a very favorable schedule for the later stretch. So if the road has to go through Philadelphia, I think that'll be really tough for Detroit or that NFC winner or NFC North winner. I think for them, they're having to deal with a little bit of energy injuries, not to the extent that the Lions are. I think the Lions, it might really come down and bite them with these injuries. Obviously, Aiden Hutchinson a couple weeks ago, and then they're starting to lose some defensive guys. They haven't lost necessarily too many players on the offensive side, which I think is a great thing, because I think that is really their strong suit, their offense. But you know, their defense is really getting hurt, and especially if they go against a team like the Eagles, in which they're a great running team, that could cause some problems. All right, here I just wanted to do who's the MVP. You know, I have a list of some guys that I think should be in the conversation. To start off, I have engaged Josh Allen. He currently got engaged to superstar actress Hailee Steinfeld, which is interesting. He might have one of the best weeks in the human history, which is how he's playing right now.
This is a Hall of Fame week.
this is if you're a dude, this is a great week. This is a great week. I think he's playing well. I think it'll come down to that first seed for him. Then we got SportsCenter top 10 Lamar Jackson. If you only watch SportsCenter, you think this guy would be the you know, the MVP, but the Ravens keep losing games, and they're losing these big time matchups. They can't beat the Steelers in Pittsburgh. They lost to the Eagles, in which their offense looked completely kaputs in that second half. And he's having a better season than last year, but they're not winning as many games. So I think that's going to come back and bite him. Then we have what if Joe Burrow had a defense with the stats he's putting up? You know, what if he's undefeated? He's playing well. I think there is some blame to be put on him for this lackluster Bengals season. They play the Cowboys on Monday night, and if they lose that one, you know, we might see a new head coach here soon, a new interim coach for the Bengals. And then finally, we got just Saquon Barkley. I think this guy is having a great season. I think it was a deadly duo pairing him with the Philadelphia offensive line. Do you think Saquon, as a running back, has a good chance to win it this year?
I definitely do. I think Saquon, in terms of just, I mean, you know, when I look at this list, at least, I mean, Josh Allen and Barkley are for sure to me at the top. I think Josh Allen has very quietly and steadily had a very good season. But Saquon Barkley is just, I don't know, I just feel like everything that he's done is pointing in the direction where he will have the best shot at winning. I mean, what he's doing right now is insane. He's on pace for to barely break Eric Dickerson's record for rushing yards in a season. I get that there's an extra game and stuff like that, but I don't think he will. But with that said, I mean, Saquon Barkley's brought so much to this Eagles team that haven't really had in years past. It's allowed Jalen Hurts to not have to scramble nearly as much and focus more on just being a passer, you know. But no, I mean, I think both of these guys obviously have had phenomenal seasons, but I think Saquon Barkley, for me, at least just edges out Josh Allen. But it'll be crucial how they end the season, though, because, there's still five weeks, I think so.
Yeah, I think if everything was well and equal, then 100% Saquon Barkley should and would be the league's MVP. But unfortunately, I just think that in this day and age, he plays the wrong position that you need to play in order to win that award. And shoot, they might as well just make a quarterback MVP award at this point. But yeah, I think that's really the only thing that's stopping him from winning it. Because like you said, he is on pace to break Eric Dickerson's single season rushing record. But even if you look a little bit closer at it, too, I know this isn't quite as big of a deal, but in college, you look, you know, kind of for like these Heisman moments, this, you know, a certain week or a certain game where he really, you know, set the standard or just made an elite play or had an elite performance. And you look at that game over the Rams on Sunday night when, you know, he had 302 total yards. He had two touchdowns. He's just kind of really been that steady presence, like Ian said, in this Eagles offense. And he's allowed them to be a lot more versatile versatile. But I do think it's Josh Allen's award to lose. He's got 27 total touchdowns. He's only got 7 turnovers. And if you think about kind of that narrative that I was talking about that the NFL always likes to look for in their MVPs, you know, the Bills traded their best receiver in Stephon Diggs. And, you know, a lot of the ideas that, hey, Josh Allen's going to have a little bit more weight on him, a little more pressure on his shoulders, that he's going to have to kind of elevate this team. A lot more is going to be on him. A lot of the Bills' success hinges on him and how he plays. And so, of course, they looked phenomenal against the Chiefs. And again, that's kind of his MVP moment, if you will. And unless Lamar Jackson goes nuclear, which he's well capable of doing for a couple weeks for the rest of the season, then I think it's Josh Allen's to lose. And just one more note, I do think that with Lamar Jackson, I think a little bit might be taken off of his case just because Derrick Henry was added to that offense, and it makes them a lot more hard, a lot harder to stop, and gives defenses a lot more to look out for. So I'd say it's Josh Allen's award to lose.
I would have to agree with that. I think Saquon has, if he breaks the record, I think you have to give it to Saquon, just because that's such a monumental feat, and we haven't seen that since Eric Dickerson, especially because that record's just insane. Anyways, that'll do it here for some NFL discussion. We're going to come back with another segment before we close out today's show. You're listening to Riff Ram Review here on KTCU The Choice.
This is the news. This morning, we are saluting the 2.2 million women who have joined in the war effort. They now make up 37% of the workforce, changing their role forever.
The prestigious Harvard Medical School is breaking ground today, opening its doors to new female applicants.
Today, little girls all over the world look to the sky, where the first woman is now in space.
Military stereotypes are challenged today with the trailblazing promotion of a U.S. female officer to 4-star general. It was just announced that the vast majority of last year's doctorate degrees were earned by women.
We've come so far, but our news is changing for the worse. More women die from heart disease and stroke than men, even though it can be prevented. Make a change at GoRedForWomen.org today. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the American Heart Association's Go Red for Women.
Welcome back to Riff Ram Review here on KTCU The Choice. I'm Jackson James, joined by Ian Apician, as this is the final couple of minutes of Luke Anderson.
I'll go home.
I guess it's just me that's joining you.
No, I didn't finish. You let me finish.
Unbelievable.
We were looking at each other like, what is he doing?
I guess we'll
let me restart.
Home.
Let me restart. Play the music.
Play it.
No, I'm being serious. Play the music. Welcome back to Riff Ram Review here on KTC The Choice. I'm Jackson James, joined alongside Ian Apician, as we are waving goodbye to Luke Anderson and Seth Dattle in their final moments here on Riff Ram Review. We kind of wanted to do a little bit of flashback for Seth, as he's been here for 43 straight episodes. Or not straight, but...
yes, been here straight. I have not... No.
We've never missed a show that we were supposed to do. So we only miss holidays, finals week, and the first week of the school year.
Couple of Iron Men right here.
Oh, yeah. Give them a medal. Impressive,
you know,
boys.
Nah.
So I'll let you two reminisce about some of your favorite moments so far, as the journey of Riff Ram Review is not over, but it's ended for some.
Yes, chapters have ended.
Yeah.
The second book is closed.
Seth, you start, because like, I can't remember stuff, but once you start saying things, I will like... you know, jump off of those and make connections. I'm trying to think.
One of my favorite memories that we had was when we got to talk to Jared Sandler.
I was going
to
say that.
Yep. I think that's my favorite one, because that was kind of like a real, like, oh boy, this is like a for real thing, mm-hmm. that we're like a real sports talk show. And so that was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. I mean, like, we didn't even do it on our scheduled time.
Yeah.
Well, BTS, did that on a middle of the day on like a Monday.
That was a very hectic.
Because that's how the schedule worked. But that was a great conversation. I think we talked to him for like an hour.
Yeah.
And so that was a lot of fun to get to talk to him, someone who I've listened to for a long time. So yeah, I think that's my favorite.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the things that I just enjoy most, I mean, obviously, I think talking about sports is one of the easiest things to do. And I mean, when me, Seth, and obviously Zion, more than a year ago now, we were thinking about bringing a sports show onto KTCU. We were basically saying, look, we have these conversations every day in the halls, in class. We text about it, whatever. We're like, why not try to put some microphones in front of us and just start talking about it? And I mean, I'm glad we did. I mean, I think it's crazy how far we've come. Seth, none of this would be possible without you producing and editing the audio files. All behind the scenes. I remember our first night, you and I stayed here in Mowdy until like 2:30 in the morning.
It was definitely overkill.
Definitely overkill, because we never did that again. And there's no reason to. But We did it. It was fun. Never doing that again. But no, you know, it's moments like that, you know. And then obviously a year ago when it was our first semester, you know, our prep, you know, we would meet the day before at my place, we'd be watching the MLB postseason stuff, prepping for the show, just sitting around talking sports. But I don't know, it's always those little things. But the interview with Jared Sandler, I think definitely the interview with Sedona Prince, that being our first interview in terms of athletes at TCU, I think that was a really fun one to do. And yeah, I mean, it's just fun to talk sports with your friends. I mean, there's not much that can be better than that. So
yeah, and I also want to mention this. You know, after last year, it was just, you know, me and you, Ian, to start off this year, and that was, you know, like, that would have been fine, but I think adding y'all to Jackson and Luke, yep, was really a thing that, you know, propelled us this semester, where it was really kind of tumultuous about what the future of this show would be, and now I think it's in really, really good hands. Yep. And I mean, I know Ian was going to be here anyway, but to, you know, have you, Jackson, along for the ride, and then, you know, potentially you, Luke, as well, for a little bit next semester, is definitely, you know, I'm glad that I'm not leaving this thing in total shambles, and that this will continue for at least a little bit while longer.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing, because this is a really, really good show, in my opinion. I'm really proud of the work that we've all done here every Tuesday night or Wednesday or Monday or whatever, yep, it is, for 2 hours a night. Can you talk about TCU and, you know, just the world of sports? It's been a lot of fun. I'm really proud of what we did over these 43 episodes, and I can't wait to listen to what this show has in the future, because I can't imagine where the heights of this thing can go to. I think it's a really, really good production, and I'm super thankful for all y'all. I'm super thankful to all you listeners and all everyone who supported this whole endeavor, because it means a whole lot.
Would you like to close it, Seth?
I would.
All right, man.
I would like to close it. This has been a good show, I think, tonight. We talked about college football. Talk about the NFL. I think, hey, I didn't get to talk in the NFL segment, but I think for my vote, I'd vote for Joe Burrow with a defense.
Would be my
MVP. We talked a little TCU. TCU football ended off with a bang, and TCU women's basketball is just on the rise. So that's something that is amazing for this school and for that program. But if you want to keep up to date with everything that happens in Riff Ram Review, next semester, when this thing returns on Mondays from 6 to 8 p.m., you can catch the boys here on 88.7 KTCU The Choice. Make sure to follow us on all our social channels, at Riff Ram Review, I believe, for most of them, on Instagram. Go ahead, follow that. A lot of bangers in the stories. You'll see all our conference championship game picks.
Yep.
If you missed them there, you'll also see you know, game picks for basketball games and stuff like that. Going forward in the spring. So make sure to follow us there at Riff Ram Review. But for Ian DePetian, wait, let me get the music going. Here we go. Wait. Here we go. For Ian DePetian, for Jackson James and Luke Anderson, I am Seth Dowdle, and you have been listening to Riff Ram Review right here on 88.7 KTUC, your choice for college radio.